Speak with goes, be careful what you wish for, because that finally appears in chapter 38. After 36 chapters of his friends arguing with him, God appears, and he takes Job on a little walk. Nowadays, we're blessed with things like Planet Earth or National Geographic, that we can see the beauty of the planet that we live in. But they didn't have television at the time, so God takes Job on a tour of the planet, showing him just how intricately the world is made. And he describes things like the mountain goats climbing on peaks. They take him to the polar, take him to the caps. It's just absolutely gorgeous to read. While he's doing this, he seems to be challenging Job and saying, hey, do you think you could do better? But he actually does tell Job, look, you're right. You did not sin. You did not deserve to be treated this way. Your friends are wrong. So Job is justified in that way. But then, by the end, then Job says what could be one of my favorite verses in the entire Bible, which is chapter 42, verse 3. He says, surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. The book ends with Job being rewarded for all his troubles, and all his treasures are restored and increased, and he actually lived beyond the proverbial 120 years, and he got to live to be 140. So that's the book of Job in a nutshell. So many religious scholars believe that Job was not Jewish. They would even go so far as to say that he was not a real person. So, just side note, guys, this is not at all Presbyterian of me. I've been listening to this sermon series by Otis Moss III, so I really like this. I'm just going to ask that you indulge me today and direct all your complaints towards me. So I'm going to ask you to turn to your neighbor, turn your head to your neighbor, and repeat after me. Say, neighbor.
Neighbor.
Oh, neighbor.
Job may be fictional,
but that doesn't mean he's not real. Some of you guys might be scratching your heads at that, but hopefully it'll all make sense. Okay, so bear with me. So, actually, the importance of whether or not he's a historical figure or a fictional character is secondary, because the fundamental question that Job asks is not a question that's exclusive to Jewish people or to Christian people. The question that Job asks is, why do bad things happen to good people? For the sake of this sermon, just so you guys understand, I'm treating Job as a fictional character because of the all-encompassing nature of the story. So as we said, the fundamental question posed to us is, why do good people suffer? We say good people, but when most of us say that, what we really mean is, why do we suffer? Why do the people that we love and care about suffer? So with our knowledge of a loving God, it's sometimes hard to understand suffering. Thinking about Job made me think of the story of the old farmer that entered his old, broke-down, swayback mule in the Kentucky Derby. But we're in Maryland, so we'll say the Preakness Stakes for the sake of the story. So his friends approached him, and he's like, why on earth are you putting this old, broke-down, swayback mule in the race? You know he's not going to win. You probably won't even make it out of the gate. And the old farmer responded, well, I thought some exposure would be good. Joe didn't land that well. But I don't know, maybe that's Joe. Is that God is not afraid of exposing us to life's difficulties. In fact, it might do us some good. Scholars have different views on what the big lessons are from Job. Some would say that the story shows God as a giant bully who tells us that he'll do as he likes to us regardless of our righteousness. But that interpretation doesn't necessarily square with our knowledge and understanding of God, especially in relation to Christ. The lesson that resonates more is the universality of this tale. We've all been created as unique, wonderful people. But we've also been created to be cogs in a much larger machine, which is our society. This is a difficult concept for us Americans to accept because every day we're bombarded with advertisers telling us that our wants, that our desires, desires are the most important thing for our satisfaction in our lives. It's almost an alien thought that our suffering might serve a greater purpose than our pain. But we see in John chapter 9, verse 3, when Christ and his disciples came across the man who'd been blind since birth, the disciples automatically assumed, sort of similar to Job's friends, that sin was the cause of his blindness. But Jesus answered, "Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." It's almost as if we were in a school play. We're told that the only part that we have is to enter stage right, sit up on the banana peel, and then fall face first in the mud. A lot of us would probably be pretty upset about that. And we might go to the director, and we might say, "This is all you got for me? This is the only part that I have?" And the director might respond to us by saying, "You know, if you read the 3,000 pages that led up to this, and the 3,000 pages that come after it, you'd understand how you falling actually brings the plot forward and moves the overall story." We don't always get the part of the play that we want, but as the famous theologian Mick Jagger once said, "You can't always get what you want. You get what you need." Well, once we accept that, our perspective changes. The other big lesson that we can learn from this book is the insight we gain from suffering. The book also addresses the psychological challenges of being a support system. There's the insight, or sometimes lack of insight, that someone close to us, when someone close to us is afflicted and we're called to be a caregiver. As a nurse, almost every day I see people suffering from different infirmities and their family members suffering along with them. And Job's friends in some ways remind me of some family members that I've seen actually get mad and shout at patients, "Why won't you get better?" And it's almost as if they feel personally betrayed. They help, they love the patient enough, they've done everything that the doctors have said to do, but the patient just isn't getting better, and the caregiver feels they should be getting better. And we see this in Job's friends and how their rhetoric continues to escalate throughout those 36 chapters that I referenced. And they get upset with Job because he won't accept their help or their wisdom. To discuss the other insight, the kind that we get when we are the ones who are affected by illness, I'm going to transition from speaking about a fictional character to a real person, Superman. Well, more specifically, Christopher Reeve. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the accident that led to him becoming a paraplegic. The man was an action star. Literally, he was Superman in the early movies. He had his career, his independence, and it was all taken away from him in an instant. His greatest wish following the accident was that his life would end. But he no longer actually had the physical capabilities to take his own life. So he confided this to his wife, and his wife said, "Yeah, okay, I'll kill you if that's really what you want. But first you have to stay up all night and talk to me about it." And so he agreed, and they spent the entire night talking it through, and throughout the night she was able to convince him that his life still had meaning, that he could be an inspiration for millions of people. Let's just note, very different approach from Job's friends in this. By the next morning, he chose to continue living. Christopher Reeve later said that he would not wish his accident on anybody, but that he liked the person he became much more than the vain, superficial movie star that he'd been before in his previous life. So just to make this a little bit more personal now, some of you may know that the past couple of years have been particularly trying for me and my family. Brianna and I lost a child to miscarriage. I lost my dream job in the cardiac cath lab. And I knew why these things happened, but when I asked why this was all happening to me, I got no answer. And then 2018 started, and my Aunt Betty passed away. And then a few weeks later, her younger brother, my papa, my father, passed away. And then about 5 weeks after that, my grandmother was sent home, was taken home, followed closely by my Aunt Helen. As my sole wasn't. I didn't understand the why, but I knew that God was with me. And as the year drew close, we thought that we were past the familial death, but my cousin Suleiman, clouded by his pain and his illness, decided to jump off a building about a week before his son Zana was born. Suleiman was my age, and Zana was born just a couple of weeks before my daughter Amelia. And so, in some ways, that hit the closest home to me. So, I'm going to ask you again to please turn to your neighbor and repeat after me. Neighbor.
Neighbor.
Oh, neighbor.
Oh, neighbor.
Job may be fictional.
Job may be fictional.
But that doesn't mean he's not real.
But that doesn't mean he's not real.
You are Job.
You are Job.
Maybe you've been through it.
Maybe you've been through it.
Maybe you're going through it.
Maybe you're going through it.
Maybe it's coming.
Maybe it's coming.
Or maybe all three.
Maybe all three.
But don't lose faith.
Why should the shadows come?
Why should